Welcome to the Higher Education Policy and Finance Division remote hearing, held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. Thank you all for your patience as we figure out this new committee process. A few reminders. Please mute your phones if you are not speaking so we can eliminate any background noise. Committee staff will be muting and unmuting as we go. That will be announced throughout the hearing. Please do not have this call on speakerphone as that creates connection issues. We must stick to the time allotted for this hearing, so we will be adjourning at 4 p.m. Testifiers and members, please be mindful of the time. Thank you. We will be taking all votes by roll call, except for the minutes, starting with attendance, so we know who is on the call. Staff will unmute the lines. The clerk will now take the roll.
Chair Bernardi?
Present.
Vice Chair Pryor?
Present.
Representative Nornes?
Present.
Representative Daniel?
Present.
Representative Franson? Representative Franson? Representative Gomez?
Present.
Representative Cleavorn?
Present.
Representative Lehman?
Present.
Representative Lean?
Present.
Representative Lilly?
Present.
Representative Lucero? Representative Lucero? Representative Poppy?
Present.
Representative Quam? Representative Quam? Representative Runback? Representative Runback? Representative Vang?
Present.
Representative Wolgamott?
Present.
And Representative Zhang? Representative Zhang? Chair Bernardi, the roll is complete and a quorum is present.
A quorum is present. Staff will now mute the lines. Also present on the call are our committee staff. No need to take roll, we're just going to list the names. Sean Williams, House Research. Ken Savory, House Fiscal. Bennett Smith, DFL Research. Callie Lehman, GOP Research. Addie Miller, Committee Administrator. Eric Peterson, Committee Legislative Assistant. We have testifiers on the line as well. Public notice was given, and members of the public who wish to testify have contacted staff and are also on this call. We have with us Commissioner Dennis Olson, Nikki Oliver, and Betsy Talbot, all from the Office of Higher Education, and Professor Ben Walker from Southwest Minnesota State University. As we proceed, if you have a question or wish to be recognized, please email or text the committee administrator, Addie Miller, and I will recognize you. Her contact information was provided to you in a previous email. The first order of business is to approve the minutes from our last in-person meeting on March 11th, 2020. Staff will unmute Representative Lean to make the motion.
Madam Chair, I move approval of the minutes from the March 3rd, 2020 meeting.
Representative Lean makes the motion to remove the minutes of March 11th, 2020. The committee administrator will now announce any members who wish to be recognized for discussion of the minutes. There's no discussion. Okay. Representative Lean moves the minutes for March 11th, 2020. Staff will unmute the lines. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. The motion carries and the minutes are approved. Staff will now mute the lines. Today we're discussing House File 4553. I'd now like to turn over the imaginary gavel over to our Vice Chair Pryor. Staff will now unmute her line.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. Would you like to move your bill?
I will move House File 4553 to be laid over.
Chair Bernardi moves House File 4553 be laid over. There is an author's amendment labeled A1. Chair Bernardi, would you move your amendment and tell us about it?
The A1 amendment removes a provision that isn't necessary at this time. I move the A1 amendment. Members, I ask for your support and adoption of this amendment to get the bill in its proper form before we move on with testimony on the bill.
Chair Bernardi moves the A1 amendment. Staff will now unmute the lines. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Bernardi?
Aye.
Vice Chair Pryor?
Aye.
Representative Norness?
Aye.
Representative Daniel?
Aye.
Representative Franson? Representative Franson? Representative Gomez?
Aye.
Representative Cleavorn?
Aye.
Representative Lehman?
Aye.
Representative Lean?
Aye.
Representative Lilly?
Aye.
Representative Lucero?
Pass.
Representative Poppy?
Aye.
Representative Quam? Representative Quam?
Pass.
Representative Runbeck?
Aye.
Representative Vang?
Aye.
Representative Wolgamott?
Aye.
Representative Jean?
Aye.
There are 14 ayes and 0 nays, and 2 abstentions, Vice Chair Pryor.
With 14 ayes and 0 nays, the motion carries, and the A1 amendment is adopted. Staff will now mute the lines. Chair Bernardi, you may proceed with your testimony.
House File 4553 is the result of the Office of Higher Education's work we asked them to do last year to help us prevent students from situations like that of the Argosy closure. I'd like to recognize Betsy Talbot from the Office of Higher Education to help walk us through the bill.
Staff will now unmute Ms. Talbot's line. Ms. Talbot, if you will state your name and position for the record and proceed with your testimony.
I apologize, I forgot to unmute. My name is Betsy Talbot. I am the manager of institutional registration and licensing for the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. I want to thank you for your time today to go over our supplemental bill for the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. This bill establishes 3 new fees for higher education institutions overseen or regulated by the office's licensing and registration division. This division maintains regulatory oversight of schools, monitors at-risk schools, and supports students when schools close. Since 2016, 33 college campuses for 14 colleges have closed, more than double of the previous 5 years combined. During closures, OHC receives student records, communicates with students, facilitates teach-out agreements, grade transfer agreements, and provides services to other students. In addition, the bill changes regulatory language that balances student consumer protections and the regulatory requirements of institutions. Section 1 amends Minnesota Statutes 136A by requiring private state financial aid institutions to secure and maintain additional security if required under the Private Career School Act or the Minnesota Private and Out-of-State Public Post-Secondary Education Act. In addition, the bill adds language for participating schools. The surety bond requirement only applies to some private schools and is necessary to ensure risks to state financial aid programs if schools close abruptly and do not pay funds back due to the school or to the student or to the state of Minnesota. Section 2 establishes the office's termination procedures, and Section 3 provides a Chapter 14 hearing right for any institution terminated from state financial aid eligibility. Section 4 amends Minnesota Statute 136A.64, Subdivision 1, by modernizing the financial statements required for private degree-granting institutions to the office as part of the registration process. The documents do reference the financial documents provided to the U.S. Department of Education that they use to monitor financial viability, and then also any other data or information needed to determine whether the school is at risk of an abrupt closure. Section 5 amends Minnesota Statutes 136A.646 by updating and adding additional security requirements. The section also permits the office to require an increased surety bond, prohibit registered institutions from accepting tuition and fee payments made through cash, alternative loans, or equivalent prior to the add-drop period of the current period of instruction, or prohibit a registered institution from enrolling new students if the office determines that any registered institution does not meet the financial resource criteria under 136A.65, Subdivision 4, Paragraph A, Clause 2, or determines that any registered institution is vulnerable to a precipitous closure under 136A.675. Finally, the section outlines the priority order of how surety funds should be used in the event of a school closure. Additional securities act as an insurance policy for state financial aid dollars and student tuition revenue. The majority of registered institutions would not need to see a new bond being required under this language. What the institutions may see a change is if they already have a bond, which we have only several, would see a bond increase as the cap would be removed. The cap needs to be removed to ensure that the school's insurance for state tax dollars and tuition payments are recovered. The current cap is at $250, and with institutions with populations of 1,000 to 40,000 students, $250,000 is insufficient insurance to cover risks to students and the state. Section 6 amends Minnesota Statute 136A.65, Subdivision 4, by adding that a school applying to be registered and to have its degrees or degree names approved must substantially meet the following criteria. 1, the school has a process to receive and act on student complaints, which is already required under law. And 2, that the school has cooperated with the office in screening, inquiry, monitoring, and contingency planning and notification processes under Section 136A.65, which is the risk analysis statute. Section 7 amends Minnesota Statute Section 136A.65, Subdivision 4, which clarifies that the office may grant new schools with their physical location in Minnesota and programs a one-year conditional approval for degrees or use a term in its name to allow the schools the opportunity to apply and receive accreditation as required under 136A. Subdivision 1A. This provision is also in the OHE policy bill. Section 8 amends Minnesota Statutes 136A.65, Subdivision 8, by adding additional reasons for disapproval of registration, including failing to have any enrollment, failing to provide the additional surety required, or the school is vulnerable to an abrupt closure and the risk to student and taxpayers can no longer be balanced with the institution remaining open. Additionally, the section outlines the actions the office can take regarding the administration of state financial aid if the office issues an order refusing, revoking, or suspending the school's registration, approval of a school's degree, or use of a regulated term in the school's name, or issues an order granting conditional approval due to the school's failure to meet the risk analysis requirements under sections 136A.75. This language is also written to address some of the concerns that we saw related to the Argosy closure and the actions that Argosy took in relation to state financial aid dollars and the failure to pay money directly to students. This language is also designed to ensure that emergency acts are not needed by the office in order to ensure state financial aid dollars are sent to students appropriately. Additionally, we want to mention that schools that have no enrollment in registered programs use OAG's approval letter to validate their exempt program. This is problematic as there's no way for OAG to evaluate a school's quality when there is no enrollment outcomes for the approved program. Section 9 amends Minnesota Statute 136A.653, Subdivision 1, and Section 11, Minnesota Statute 136A.657, Subdivision 2, by modifying registration exemptions. This is to ensure that OAG does not grant an exception to a school that uses misleading advertising with students. Exemption letters are used by institutions to gain federal and state taxpayer dollars, including VA benefits and WIOA funding, and we would like to add a vetting process when those exemption letters are used by those institutions. Section 12 amends Minnesota Statute 136A.657, Subdivision 2, by adding a fee based on full-time equivalent enrollment for schools participating in reciprocity agreements overseen or operated by the office to cover administrative expenses related to approving, renewing, or monitoring schools for reciprocity. Minnesota participates in the National State Authorization Agreement. OAG administers SARA on behalf of the acronym on behalf of all participating institutions. This includes public and private institutions. As of date, there are 41 institutions participating in SARA from the state of Minnesota. This includes 28 MinState institutions, 28 private institutions, and 5 campuses of the University of Minnesota. The fee brackets in this section are based on the SARA brackets for FTEs in the different areas or the different amounts that the fees are based. And the fees have been calculated to be a low end of the national average. There are 34 states in the state or in the United States that participate in SARA that charge fees to different participating institutions. Fees from other states range from $250 per institution all the way up to approximately $40,000 per institution participating in SARA. And those are the fees amount paid directly to the state for that administration cost. Section 13 amends Minnesota Statute 136A.65, updating the processes that OAG uses to deduct institutions at risk of an abrupt closure, including the analysis of financial and non-financial measures, and adds communication triggers for the office. This new process includes notifications to allow schools to provide feedback to the office if the office determines that that school is at risk of closure, but also provides options for the office to escalate consumer protections for students and taxpayers when the schools pose a risk for an abrupt closure, but it is in the best interest of students to allow the school to remain open. This provision is one of the most important provisions to address the issues encountered by Argosy's closures. OAG has been hosting a legislative working group to assist in the drafting of risk analysis and to work collaboratively on this language. It's important to note that the specific metrics of risk analysis will be done with a stakeholder working group later this year. OAG has received a grant to work on transparency and improve processes for stakeholder feedback and financial viability monitoring. Section 14 amends Minnesota Statutes 136A.69, Subdivision 1, by increasing the annual registration renewal fee from $1,200 per year to $2,000 per year. A registered school is a degree-granting school. Section 15, Minnesota Statute 136, Section 15 amends Minnesota Statute 136A.69, Subdivision 4, by adding a registration investigation fee to cover administrative expenses related to investigating an institution and or degree programs for activities that are inconsistent with the requirements of Minnesota's Private and Out-of-State Public Post-Secondary Act. This fee is designed to recoup administrative costs for institutions that require significant administrative resources to oversee. Section 16 amends Minnesota Statute Section 136A.69 by adding a student complaint fee that would reimburse the office for expenses necessary to review or investigate any student complaint under Section 136A.672 for any registered institution that has more than five student complaints per annual registration period. In the last year, we've only had two institutions that have registered institutions that have had complaints that have exceeded five, and for a total of 10 student complaints that would have generated a complaint revenue. So it's not many institutions that that fee would be charged to. Apologize. Section 16 amends Minnesota Statutes 136A. I'm sorry, I think I've already done that. Section 17 amends Minnesota Statutes 136A.24, subdivision 4, by adding a licensure investigation fee to cover administrative expenses related to investigating institution and or review program for activities that are inconsistent with the requirements of the Private Career School Act. A licensed school is a non-degree granting school, and it is the same type of fee structure for the registered institutions. Section 18 amends Minnesota Statutes 136A.824 by adding a licensed school student complaint fee to reimburse the office for administrative expenses associated with student complaints, but limiting the fee to only be applied to complaints after the institution has already had five student complaints in the current registration period. It's very unusual for institutions to have more than five student complaints, and we estimate that we would only have one institution a year that may have one student complaint above the five. Section 19 amends Minnesota Statutes 136A.829, subdivision 1, by adding a requirement to licensure that does not use fraudulent, coercive, dishonest, or demonstrating gross mismanagement in the course of business. Section 20 amends Minnesota Statutes 136A.833, by modifying licensure exemptions, ensuring that the office does not grant an exemption to a school that uses misleading advertising with students. Section 21 also amends Minnesota Statutes 136.834, subdivision 2, to modify religious exemptions to ensure that regardless of how an institution is organized, religious programs remain exempt and OHE only has to regulate non-religious programs. The current statute is unclear whether religious programs are regulated if the school has religious programs and non-religious programs. And that concludes the office's summary of the supplemental bill.
Staff will now unmute Ms. Talbot's line. Thank you, Ms. Talbot. Professor Ben Walker. Professor Walker, would you please state your name and affiliation for the record and proceed with your testimony? And staff, would you please now unmute Mr. Walker's line?
Hello?
Hello, we hear you.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, my name is Ben Walker. I'm a associate professor at Southwest Minnesota State University.
Okay, you may proceed. Thank you, Mr. Walker.
Thank you. I wanted to testify here today in support of this. I think it's excellent because it attempts to tie up some loopholes that's currently in here. There's a couple of main things why I want to tell you why I support this. First, I like the idea that it ties loss of eligibility from federal programs to the loss of state student aid programs. If you're not able to meet certain standards, then I think from the federal aspects, if you're not able to offer, institutions are not able to offer something like Pell Grants, then they definitely shouldn't be able to have the resources that the state provides, because that's pretty standard stuff for higher ed institutions. Second, I think why I like this bill. It alters the surety bond from a flat scale. I believe it went from like the minimum of $10,000 to up to $250,000, I believe. And now it's at a 10% rate of revenue from the tuition and fees for the institution. And speaking from someone who teaches at a small state college, that seems much more equitable to make sure that there's a fair surety bond rate that everyone has to go through, and it's not just a flat scale that people are kind of guessing through. Finally, I really like that the bill, it provides no exemptions or hearings for institutions that are deemed deceitful. I know institutions are grasping for students to come in, and they're trying to spin everything as positively as they can to try to get students on board. But if they have a history of hiding information or trying to mislead the public in any way, I think that should be they should be exempt from these programs. I think these edits here go about doing that. I think it's important that all of the Minnesota higher education institutions are held to the same standard when it comes to these types of programs, and I think this bill moves that in the right direction. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your testimony, Professor Walker. Staff will now mute the line. Now we will take questions from members. If a testifier is called on to respond to a question, staff will unmute their line as needed. Please keep in mind, members, that we need to stick to our allotted time and adjourn promptly at 4 o'clock. Would our committee administrator please announce the first member wishing to be recognized?
Vice Chair Fryer, there are no requests.
No members have questions at this time, and I'll committee administrator, could you remind people if they have a question, how they should get on the list, how they should notify you, and I think you can do that either by texting them again or sending them an email, and we'll just give a couple more minutes to make sure that we're not missing anybody.
Vice Chair Pryor and members, Representative Runbeck wishes to be recognized.
All right. Thank you, Representative Runbeck. A staff will unmute your line. Representative Runbeck, you may proceed.
All right. Thank you. So I'm looking at, the first sections here talking about the financial, I guess all of the areas that a school could violate. Is someone able to provide us just a run through on what was the name of that school? How they
Argosy.
Violated these provisions? Yeah, Argosy, I imagine. Mm-hmm. But I wondered, we didn't hear that much about that area, it seems to me. So where were they in violation?
Right. Thank you, Representative Runbeck. Ms. Talbot, I would guess that you would be able to address this question. Ms. Talbot.
Sure,
you are unmuted, thank you.
No worries. I'm guessing that we're referring to Argosy University. One, Argosy failed to maintain their bond. We received notice 1 month into the semester that their bond was being revoked by their bond company. We were granted assurances that the company was working on getting a new bond, but that never took place. So that would be the first violation. And when that occurred, we were unable to provide any escalation or consumer protections for students and for state financial aid dollars. So to compensate that issue, we added those bill language to do things related to state financial aid, like paying students directly, stopping payments directly to the school so that we can ensure that those funds are not being misappropriated, which leads to the second issue that we found out that the school violated, which was the misappropriation of state financial aid dollars. When we were sending state financial aid dollars or had already sent those dollars, we found out the school was using them for issues like payroll, IT expenses, as opposed to paying those funds as required by state law to students. And then three, the institution also violated the ongoing monitoring processes that we had put in place with the institution. So we had required certain financial statements to be provided on a cyclical basis in order to monitor ongoing financial viability while the institution was preparing to be sold to a new entity or to enter into receivership. And the institution failed to provide those notices or the documentation as required, and was leaving the office with very little choices to either close the school abruptly prior to them being able to be sold, or we would have had to, which would have caused an abrupt closure for the students with no recourse, or we could have allowed the school to be open but under certain restrictions, which are limited under state law currently, or we could ignore the situation. And so we tried to do the second option. So they violated the financial viability issues, they violated the monitoring, violated the misappropriation of student funds, and they violated the bond requirement.
Okay, very good. Representative Brundeck, do you have a follow-up question?
Actually, I don't. I think that really covers my question. Thank you.
Committee Administrator, are there any more questions from members?
Vice Chair Pryor, Representative Cleborne wishes to be recognized.
Representative Cleborne, you are unmuted.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Pryor. I would just like to give a big thank you for all of the members of the committee who worked on these bills, as well as the Office of Higher Education and Chair Bernardi. This bill is particularly important when we think back to the pain and suffering that our Argosy students experienced with the closure of Argosy. And so I just want to make sure that everybody is reminded of the important pieces that are in this bill that are consumer protections for our students and also for our state and our taxpayers. So I just want to say thank you for the hard work that you've done. I know it's been a great deal of work, but this is what the people of Minnesota expect us to do. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Cleborne. And is there any question you'd like to direct to a testifier at this point? Okay, hearing none. You will be then muted, Representative Cleborne. Committee Administrator, are there further questions from members?
Madam Chair, there are no further requests.
Thank you, members. If there be no further questions, Chair Bernardi, do you have any closing comments? And Chair Bernardi?
Okay, I'm off muted now. I double muted myself.
Sorry, thank you.
Yes, thank you. So committee members and members of the public, I'm sure I'm not the only one that was incredibly moved by the testimony of the former Argosy students and faculty who test in the past. As the one that happened on April 10, 2019, our committee meeting room at the state office building was filled with former Argosy students, faculty, staff, family members, and even former students from other defunct schools. 20 people showed up in the middle of a blizzard to testify about the devastation they and their families faced because of business decisions that they had no control over. These 20 people, some of which are constituents and members of this committee, asked us for help. They asked us not only to help them in the short term, but to help other students in the long run by making sure that what happened to them cannot happen again in the state of Minnesota. While we cannot predict the future, we can try to make sure those changes with looking out for Minnesota students have the tools they need to potentially prevent another travesty. Members, I do not want to have another higher education committee hearing like that of April 10th last year, and I'm sure most of you would agree. When we bring this bill back up to pass out of our committee at a later date, I urge you to remember each and every one of these students, faculty, and staff, and vote in favor of House File 4553. Thank you for all the members and their support. Our bipartisan support has been amazing on this work, and I appreciate everyone's efforts, and thank you for your comments, Representative Cleaver.
Hearing no further discussion, House File 4553, as amended, is laid over, and I will return the gavel now to Chair Bernardi.
Members, thank you for your participation and patience in this remote hearing. We do plan to meet at least one more time in the same fashion before session adjourns. Staff will be in touch about that next date. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.